Today, we're talking most important players for Florida State in 2025. Because, Michael, this list that we're going to cover today will make or break Florida State's upcoming season. And so I'm excited to get into this one, man. You know, it is almost time. Florida State plays a football game literally next month. So our preseason content calendar is about to be fully loaded for you guys. We got ACC Media Days coming up next week that we're going to be busy with. So this was kind of our last available show to kind of go through and do something like this. Now, if you guys watched the last episode, we talked about the impact players for 2025 after the comments that Tommy Castellanos made about we have weapons. We were just kind of going through and finding some, maybe some gold nuggets in this roster that Florida State had that maybe we weren't aware of. This is an entirely different conversation. We didn't talk about the quarterback. We didn't talk about a lot of the starters on this roster in that last episode. So this is completely different. So if you watch that one, make sure you stay tuned for this one. Make sure you stay tuned to the end to see the whole list. We also got some MLB draft talk as Florida State had a record-setting day, a record-setting performance in the MLB draft. And then, Michael, I got a doozy of a final question for you, buddy. It's going to be tough. It's going to test the head versus the heart conversation. Might be a little, you know, as an eternal Miami hater, it might be a little tough on me to answer, but I think it's going to be a fun one there to end the show. But before we jump into that, my friend, how are you? And thanks for joining me for another episode.
Oh, man, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to the ACC Media Day. It's going to be so much fun for you and I to be in the same space for only the third time in our friendship.
Yeah.
And
it's been,
and
what, two years-ish, roughly?
2 years. Exactly. Yeah. And so I'm looking forward to next week where we get a chance to get together, hang out, do some, get to talk to the coaches and players of the ACC and see what they're all about. And also I'm excited because today we get to unveil our top 20 most important players for this season. So let's get into it.
Yeah, man, it's going to be fun. And, you know, crazy thing is next time you watch us on an episode, we'll probably be recording together. And that has only happened, I think, once so far after the Miami game in 2023. So, man, I'm super excited for that. Again, make sure you lock in with us because we're going to have a ton of stuff coming out of ACC Media Days. But, Michael, let's just jump right into this top 20 players list here. And let me first start by kind of setting the stage a little bit. We picked 20 because 10 didn't really feel like enough, right?
Correct.
And if you get to that 30, 40 player mark or more, you might as well just say the whole roster
Everybody's important,
right? Because then you're past, you're too deep. So we thought 20 was probably a pretty good number. And you're probably thinking to yourself like, hey, duh, 20 players are make or break your season. Yeah, I mean, obviously, clearly, right? But that's why they're on the list. I think, Michael, for me, when we talk about this, it's more about the explanation of why it is rather than the order they are. And so at that point, I also want to acknowledge that they are all important, right?
Right.
There could be a situation where your backup long snapper is the most important player on that play at that time, right? But we can also acknowledge that maybe the starting quarterback is a little bit more vital to FSU's success than others. So that's what we're ranking today. Kind of like the most important players on this team where if they have success, Florida State's probably going to have success, right? And the order that you need that to fall in place. Now, I'm not going to lie, Michael. I have a little bit more than 20 because I kind of did some multiples at some positions. So I cheated on my homework a little bit there. And one thing I will say about this list before we jump right in is, you know, for me, Michael, and your list might be different. The way I have mine constructed is there's not a ton of separation between about number 4 and number 20.
Yep.
But number 1 through 3 are by far the most important. And there's a gap between 3 and 4. And so that's why I say stay tuned to the very end to make sure it makes sense. And that's why I also say that, you know, before someone like necessarily comes into comments and goes, okay, well, how come you had this guy at number 11 and this guy at number 10? You could probably flip half of these around. It's again, it's more about the explainer of why they're on the top 20 list. And so, Michael, let's go. The last thing I need to say about this, we have not shared each other's list.
We don't know.
We have no clue who Michael picked. He has no clue who I picked. We agreed not to say anything before the show to make it fun. Obviously, there's going to be some overlap, so we'll just keep that what it is. But we'll go ahead and start. Michael, I'll let you kick things off with number 20.
All right. At number 20, at top 20 most important players for Michael, number 20, Omar Graham, linebacker, okay? And let me just quickly say, he is probably going to fill that Mike spot there for Tony White's defense there after starting 8 games in 2024. He finished with 37 tackles, 3.5 tackles for a loss and a sack. And he got better. At the beginning of the year, We wanted to ship him to another country by the end of the year. We were very excited. So he is, he has to be on his game and growing for FSU to have success. He's my number 20.
I agree. He is on my list, not at number 20. I will give that away, but I agree with the sentiment there, right? Early in the season, we wanted to throw him into the portal. At the end of the season, we were happy to have him out. I think that was a big addition to get him back. And you have some decent depth in your linebacker room, but who's going to step up and be those starters, right?
That's right.
And so for me, maybe I should have kicked it off, Michael, because my number 20 is the kickers, right? We are replacing, and I'm comboing them here. I'm giving both of them.
I thought about adding them, but I didn't know.
I put them at number 20, man, because last year they were the best players on our team. We're replacing two excellent kickers. Yep. And, you know, man, when you have a team like we have this year that could be in some close games, that field goal or that field position could be the make or break to win that game. And so I have the kickers at number 20 to start my list, man, because I think it, you know, special teams plays a big difference, man, especially when you might be in some close games.
That's right. Absolutely. I mean, listen, we this is Florida State. We know we have a history with having some of the best kickers and some of the most heartbreaking kicking moments. So I agree with you. I mean, the kickers are important. I thought about adding the kickers. I was like, man, where do I put them at? But I didn't put them in there. So I like that. I like that. So we're going to move to number 19. And I told Jesse pre-show that you're going to see a theme with mine because I started with position and then players in that position. And at number 19 is another linebacker, Elijah Herring, the transfer who came over from I think, was it Memphis, right?
Memphis. So formerly of Tennessee.
Formerly of Tennessee as well. Had a lot of starts. There's a lot of career, six sacks, 151 career tackles, 14 TFLs. He's also going to be important in this 3-3-5 defense. The linebacker play is going to be heavy because you're going to might end up putting your hand in the dirt. You know, you'll be rushing and play pass. And so that linebacker core between him and Omar are going to be really important for them to step up.
Yeah, and I will save a little bit of what I got because he is on my list as well. but no, I think it's huge here, man. He's going to be the guy that I think you're kind of relying on in the middle of that defense. He was the leading tackler at Memphis last year. He led Tennessee in tackles the year before that. I mean, he's just a productive linebacker. And so I think he is going to be a very important part of this defense. For me, Michael, number 19 is going to come a little bit out of left field, and it is Brock Glenn. Or even Kevin Sperry. You can add Kevin Sperry on there too. And the reason I say that is because, Michael, what if something happens to Thomas Castellanos, right? He's a mobile quarterback. We've seen him get banged up in the past. You know he's going to be running the ball in Gus Malzahn's offense.
Yeah.
So what happens if he has to miss a game? What happens if he has to miss an important game? Yep. What if, say, you sneak up and you beat – you know, Alabama game one and you roll into Miami 4-0 and then something happens, he tweaks an ankle or something, knock on wood. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but then Brock Glenn has to step in and start for a game, man. Who you have in that backup quarterback position, I think could, you know, if he had to play for 2 or 3 weeks at a time or something like that's going to be huge. And so for me, I hesitated to put in there, but I think the weight of what he brings, if it were to happen, I'm hoping he doesn't even need to play unless it's a blowout situation. But if he does, I think the weight of importance is high.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. I didn't think about putting Brock Glenn on there because I don't think he's going to factor into the season. But like you said, you're right. If he does get injured, if Tommy gets injured, you know, it's probably going to be Brock. I can't imagine that they'd go to Kevin Sperry this early unless he shows something crazy. So I didn't have Brock in there. That's a really good call. All right, number 18. Linebacker again, my last linebacker, I promise. My last linebacker, but we're going with Justin Cryer or Juice Cryer. All right. Yeah, so we're going with Juice. You know, obviously he missed 2024 due to a lot of injury, but he has been from what we've heard, he's picked up the scheme, the 3-3-5 scheme easily, and he is a dependable three down linebacker. And this is going to be really important to have a linebacker who can be on the field for most downs, right? Not just a pass rushing down, not just a run block or run blitz down, but most downs. He can get out, he can cover, and he can also tackle in space. So he's going to be very important as well in that linebacker group. So that 20 to 18 right there is the linebackers. Yeah.
You know, and I love the pick because Juice was actually a guy that started to look really good towards the end before he started battling the injuries.
Yeah.
And he was a guy that, like, okay, he's a little bit undersized. He's not the most athletic guy, but he's usually in the right place at the right
time.
And he's got a nose for the football. I want to say isn't he the one I heard that had thought about transferring initially, but then he saw the scheme and was like, okay, I can see where I can fit into this. And so I love the pick. Now, Michael, remember I said I cheated on my homework here. So I just got a 3-for-1 special going on here. Number 18, I have Stephon Thompson, Omar Graham, and Blake Nicholson all grouped together. And the reason I have those three at the same position is because, Michael, I think, you know, you're probably looking at Elijah Herring being at least one starting backer.
Yep.
And then you just need two out of these three, right?
That's right.
And it's hard. Some of these guys, some of these guys, it's hard to make a call on because I don't know what they are, right?
Right.
I don't know
what they're
going to look at, you know, look like in Florida State's defense. You know, Stephon Thompson was a guy who kind of lost a starting spot at Nebraska. So, but he's got a ton of experience in Tony White's defense. He's followed him from stop to stop to stop. You know, he was a starter at Syracuse, then a rotational player at Nebraska. What are you even going to get out of him? I think Omar Graham can be and will be a starter for you. And I also think Blake Nicholson is the guy that you need him to be that guy this year.
Yes.
So the reason I have these three here is like, man, it doesn't matter which one of the three end up being your other two linebackers. I just need two of them to step up. So I have those three guys grouped together that like, man, just let me get two out of the three. And you could even throw, like, if you wanted to put Juice Cryer at the tail end of that and say, man, I think Elijah Herring's your starter.
Yep.
Let me get two of the four to be serviceable starting college linebackers. And that's why I have him at number 18. So who you got it? Go ahead. And then
I was just going to say that Blake Nicholson is key. Like, I mean, I don't have him on my list because I'm not sure he's going to be in that starting lineup, but I think he will factor into playing time. And this is do or die for Blake this year.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You've had 2 years on campus. You played as a true freshman. You played as a true sophomore. Like, this is it. This is when you start to show whether or not you're worth the scholarship that you got. So it's time to step up.
Yeah, and I do look at Blake as he might be one of your best cover linebackers.
Right.
So I do think there will be a lot of packages that you'll want him on the field. He is probably one of your most athletic linebackers. I mean, from what I've read with Elijah Herring, you kind of get a little bit of the DJ Lundy treatment there. Like, he's a great run stopper, not so great in the pass game. You know, Juice is kind of hard because you can pick on him because he's short.
Right.
Omar is pretty serviceable in the pass game. So that's the reason I think Blake Nicholson is going to be a big guy to watch there in the linebacker room in the pass game. So
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Who you got at 17?
Okay. At 17, we're moving on to, we're going to stay in the defense. We're looking at Earl Little Jr., the product from Alabama who came in and how we were so excited last year to get him. And he didn't really show us much, but I think he's going to be very important in this 3-3-5 defense and in defensive back. I think Patrick Surtain with a second year with this guy, I think you're going to see a significant jump.
Yeah, and the thing is, when he made the move to safety, you started to see things really pick up for him. He struggled on the outside of corner, once he made the move to safety, he plays downhill, he hits hard, he'll get in your face. I love the type of player that he is. We saw some of the clips that came out of Alabama's practice where, I mean, he was legitimate.
He was a dog.
Right. I'm not going to sit there and just write him off. And also, read into they're bringing him to ACC Media Days. I think he's going to be poised to be a starter in this three high safety look that you got under Tony White. So that's a great, he's on my list. He's just a little bit higher up there. So number 17 for me, Michael, is another combo here because I don't need both of you to be good. It'd be great if both of you were good. Just let one of you be good. And at number 17 for me is KJ Sampson / Tylan Coleman. Tylan Coleman is actually a name that I forget even exists.
Yep.
He is a massive defensive tackle from the JUCO ranks. And, you know, when we get through this list, man, there's going to be a lot of starters up there too. But one of the positions that I'm the most nervous about from depth and talent this year is defensive tackle.
Yeah.
And so who is going to be that second wave of defensive tackle? I mean, let's be honest, man, this Alabama game, it's going to be 9 bajillion degrees out there.
That's right.
Daryl Jackson can't play every snap. You know what I mean? Daniel Lyons can't play every snap. Eventually, they got to come off the field. And if they come off the field and you don't have a serviceable backup like we saw last year with like Grady Kelly or something like that, man, the teams are going to pick on you during that situation. They're going to know as soon as they come off the field, we got you. And so I think that second layer of defensive lineman, man, it's going to be important to kind of the ceiling of what your season can be, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I mean, I was wondering what was Grady serviceable for, like McDonald's, because that boy didn't show up nothing.
I know. He was a washing machine. He just got there and spin around a little bit and then back on where he went.
Back on where he was. Okay, at number 16, staying with the defensive backs, Shaheem Brown. Now, really quick, the reason why I have him here is because he's important. He's a top 20. But he let us down last year. He did not have he didn't show up his normal leadership self. He wasn't as dog mentality. He got pushed out a lot of plays. We saw a lot of loafing last year. So he needs to step up. This is a two, you know, they like to use a lot of safeties back there in that 3-3-5. Mm-hmm. He's going to be important enough. Does he bring back that same dog mentality to step up as a leader this year?
Yeah, and, you know, I love that pick because that safety is going to be important because, you know, when you look up, like, it's almost like baseball, right? Like, right at the middle, your heart of your lineup, the catcher, the pitcher, the center fielder. Like, this is the heart of your defense, and he's going to be probably that lead safety on the back end, so you need him to have a big year. And really, man, I'm staying right there in the safety vein with you in this pick, number 16. I have KJ Kirkland because I think he is going to be your starting third safety, or depending on the pack. Obviously, they could run high or they could run three high, which they do a lot in a 3-3-5. I think KJ Kirkland is your most experienced guy coming back that's not named Shaheem Brown. We saw Earl Little make some moves back there last year, but, you know, KJ Kirkland played over 400 snaps at safety. And so I think he's going to be kind of that number two, number three guy. And so I think that's going to be a pivotal part of this defense. Like we said, right up the heart of that defense. And so KJ Kirkland comes in at number 16 for me.
You know, I love that pick too. And here's the thing. Every time you turn on the film, every time you watch a game, you see his name, you see flashes of him. And so the question is, does he put it all together this year to be like that dynamic impact player? All right. Number 15, my last DB of the top 20 list. We went out and paid a lot of money for him because he had more interceptions than our whole DB did last year. Mr. Jeremiah Wilson comes in at number 15. Listen, I mean, this dude, you know, again, he was a lockdown corner. You're probably going to have him. He's your starting corner on either on the left or right side. He's gonna be the one you're putting on an island with probably somebody's best receiver to lock them down. He is very important, but that whole DB unit, you know, I have them at this stage because they're important, but we have so many good pieces, and I just trust Patrick Surtain to develop them the way they need to. So Jeremiah Wilson comes in at number 15 for me.
I think you are spot on, man. You have a guy here who you are basically saying we need to be able to put you on an island, right? Yep. Like Revis Island back in the day, you know, and what it would do for your defense if he can provide that is massive. And so I love the pick. He's on my list. He's a lot higher for that reason. And so number 15 for me, I have Deontay McCray / Diamante Diggs because they're essentially the same person, right? Yeah, I mean, basically. I don't know. You just need one of them, at least one of them, to be good. And this gets back to that second wave of defensive linemen. But also, Michael, here's the kicker with these two. This is why I think these two get a bump up the list. There's a good chance if Jason Jenkins is not back by that Alabama game with the injury, they've talked about this before. He is way ahead of schedule to come back.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it's going to be that Alabama game.
Right.
One of these two is probably starting for you in that Alabama game. True. I think they're going to be very high up on the list. That may be, you know, if you look at the layout of the season and Jason Jenkins is close, but he's not there for Bama, why risk it against East Texas A&M? Give it the bye week, bring him back, you know, against Kent State or whatever. So they may be your starter for the first two games. And so these two, I think, are big. We don't know what James Williams is yet. Yeah. We don't know what Jason Jenkins is yet. Neither one of them have been full-time starters, whereas Deontay McCray and Diamante Diggs have been. So these guys technically have more experience.
Yeah.
Them having a big season and being kind of old faithful, old reliable, you know, on the defensive front would be huge, man. You know, if you could get, the one that started across from Jermaine Johnson, I'm thinking of
Kier Thomas. Yeah.
And if you could just be like a Kier Thomas, you know what I mean? Just maybe you're not the star of the show, but you're just a daggone solid consistent second piece on that. Yeah. Yes. Man. That's why I think these two are important.
I absolutely agree with you. And I agree with you so much that I have them much higher on my list.
Okay.
I have them much higher because you know what I always talk about. The most important things, I don't want to spoil it, but they're much higher on my list right now.
And I've heard the staff is very high on what they expect out of Diamante Diggs.
That's right. Yep. I've heard the same thing. All right. So number 14, we're moving to offense finally.
All right.
And we are talking about running back, and I only have one on my list, and it's Gavin Sawchuk, the transfer from Oklahoma who gashed us for, I don't know, 100 and something yards in 2022. 107
yards and a touchdown, I think.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, we couldn't stop him. And then obviously he played a little injured last year, so he didn't have as much. But I think he is going to be very important. Now, we talked about this off pre-show. that running back room is so interchangeable right now.
Yeah.
So the reason I give him a leg up on everybody else is because they went out and, I mean, Gus Malzahn wanted him specifically. Yeah. So this is probably the horse that Gus Malzahn is going to ride to death this year if he stays healthy. Obviously, you can look at like the Kuzma kid coming in who's a freshman who's supposed to be electric five-star. You know, eventually, you know, we'll see how that plays out. Obviously, you got Rodale Williams. You got, you know, Sam Singleton. You got, you know, all the other ones, Kaziah Holmes. They're so interchangeable, but right. I just give a leg up on Gavin Sochok because Gus Malzahn went after him specifically.
Yeah, I think this guy, and if you want a piece on Gavin Sochok, go back and watch our last episode. Yes. If you watch him, then you watch it and you already know what we're going to talk about. This was a guy that when he got an opportunity was electric. I mean, it's like he can't not run for 100 yards whenever he gets an opportunity. And so I think he is going to be your bell cow. I really do.
Yep.
I think you're going to see with Kroma, he's going to get an expanding workload probably after the Alabama game. I think you'll see him get one or two totes in there in that game. But, you know, you're talking about a big game with a true freshman who wasn't here in spring.
That's great.
So I think Sochok, if he's healthy, if he's 100%, I think he's going to be your lead back. Like you said, he's going to be your horse that you're going to ride throughout the majority of the season. But there's a lot of depth in that running back room. So I love the pick, man. For me, number 14 is Daniel Lyons. Ooh. I think Daniel Lyons is going to be very important to this defense. He was a guy who played well last year. He actually, if I remember correctly, he kind of tailed off a little bit later in the season, but he actually supplanted himself above Daryl Jackson there at one point when Daryl Jackson wasn't playing so well. And this is a guy that I like. And, you know, again, if Tony White wants to go to an even front, guess who D tackle number two is? That's Daniel Lyons. And so you need him to be there. You know, last year you had Josh Farmer, who was your lead guy. Now you're bumping Daryl Jackson up into that slot. You know, you go back to where you had Fisk and you had like Fabian Lovett. You had that solid defensive tackle number two to where you can't just double the best guy all the time. You're going to need Daniel Lyons. And then, you know, Lord forbid something happens to your starter, he is now your number one guy. I think Daniel Lyons is very vital to this defensive front. And so that's why I have him at number 14.
Man, I actually love that pick because you're right. I wasn't even thinking about even front defenses that Tony White would call. He's very multiple in that 3-3-5. So you're probably going to see a lot more linebackers coming down to make that even front. But when they do exchange players and they're actually going to go with two DTs, Daniel Lyons is incredibly important to that. So I totally understand that. All right. So coming in at number 13, Jesse, we're going to go with the tight end position. Randy Pittman. I think we're going to see a revitalization of the tight end position. And every time I look at the film on this guy, man, I'm so much reminded of what Jaheim Bell could have been if he had stayed healthy in 2023. And I really think that Randy Pittman's going to be really important for Tommy as Tommy's doing a lot of rolled out, having that big tight end who can block but also catch. Like, I think Pittman is going to be vitally important to this offense success. I have him slotted at number 13.
Man, I love that pick. And, you know, unfortunately, dude, I had him on my list. And I did take him off, but I had him on my list because I think he can be such a big part of this offense, right? Over 400 yards receiving last year at UCF. You know, the only thing for me, the only reason he really didn't make my list was because I was like, well, you know, if Landon Thomas is good, then if he's not great, then it doesn't really matter. You got Amari Williams there at the tight end position too. And look, if we had had number 21, because secret show note, I deleted number 21, which was Randy Pittman / Landon Thomas on my list because I didn't want to go over 20 more than I already did. But I love this pick, man. He's a guy that you can use at H-back. At the Jaheim Bell is a perfect comparison. It's one that I've made. He's kind of that shorter, kind of thick tight end that does a lot of things. You can line him up at H-back, man. I think he is going to be a really big part of this offense. Yep. So I love that pick. For me, at number 13, I have Earl Little Jr.
Come on.
I moved him a little bit farther up the list because I think, again, with them bringing him to ACC Media Days, I think he's going to be a starting safety in this defense. And I think he's a guy that has a very high upside. Again, we talked about it earlier and what we've seen on film from him. And I think he's going to be a big part of this defense if he does get that starting nod. So number 13 for me is Earl Little Jr.
I really like that. I mean, Tony White talked a lot about Earl Little Jenner Jr. and called him, you know, said like he had some really big hits in the springtime and he was consistent in playmaking. And like you said, they're bringing him to ACC Media Days. They're trying to send a message that he's going to be a leader and an effective, productive player in that defense. So I love that pick at number 13.
Yeah.
All right. Number 12, Squirrel White, wide receiver. I like it. Okay. I know you're like, man, that feels low, but hear me out. Listen, if he is healthy, right, he's probably going to be your slot receiver. He's going to be running a lot of your gadget stuff. And then, boom, over the top, you know, because he's so fast. He's going to probably be your wide receiver screen, your bubble route screens, you know, your lateral stuff, your RPO kind of flat routes. He's going to be doing a lot of that stuff. They're going to be moving him all around the offense. And I think he's going to be critical for Tommy to get that rapport with early on. He is going to be second critical. And when we get to the number where I have this other guy at, you'll understand why. But I have Squirrel Wright at number 12.
Man, I agree so much so that I have Squirrel Wright at number 12. That's our first one of the day to be the same. I think so, man, because again, we're going to talk about another receiver here later on in the rankings. Obviously, we both have him higher than number 12. And I think you're counting more on him to be the guy.
Yep.
But you can't just have one good receiver. You can't just have, because all it takes is them throwing a safety over top and taking him away, taking Deuce away. We know what we're talking about.
Yep.
And so you need that second threat. And I think Squirrel White is a severely underrated guy, man. Right. I think when you get him the ball in space, he can make a ton of plays. The one thing that's been weird for me this offseason is you've heard a ton of talk about Deuce, who we'll both obviously talk about later. Really has been quiet on the Squirrel White home front. Haven't heard much of anything. Now, I want to say when he came for his official visit, he might have still been in a boot. So he might have been limited in some things there. He was coming off injury there in 2024 at Tennessee. But I think Squirrel White's going to be huge for this offense because you got the size. This is your speed. You got, Thunder. This is your lightning. You need him to be good because if he's good, he makes Deuce Robinson good. And so that's my number 12, man. Let's hear number 11.
All right. Well, if Squirrel White is your lightning, as you said, then Thunder must be Deuce Robinson, number 11. Listen, the reason why I have him at number 11 the 11th most important player is because he is going to be what stretches the field and gets those DBs off of your running backs, right? So that way you don't have the linebackers and all like that crowding the line of scrimmage. It's going to force teams. You know, Gus Malzahn is going to be very multiple in his formation. He's going to run a lot of motions, but all he's trying to do, it's simple play calling to match you up to get his strength on your weakness. That's Deuce on somebody who can't cover him. And you just watch. Now, Deuce is going to be involved in the short game and all that stuff.
Right.
But mostly, boom. He's going to catch you over the top once, and he's going to make that defense stretch, which then forces you to actually think, forces defensive coordinators to try to figure out, are they going to bring two, you know, to cover him, like a corner and a safety for help, which means now you're having to do that. And Gus likes to run this thing called Power Four, okay, where he has four, usually, you know, either two wide receivers, a tight end, and a running back on one side of the field. And oftentimes, he either puts his deep threat on the opposite side of that, so now all the defense is focused on that, or he will reverse that. And you put Deuce on an island, and I'd wager the 25 cents in my pocket, he's going to win that jump ball situation 75% of the time. So I got Deuce at number 11.
Yeah, this is a guy they're going to try to get in one-on-one matchups a lot. We've heard so much this offseason about, you know, just not even just Deuce himself, but the connection that him and Tommy have together. They've worked a lot over the offseason. So I think this is going to probably be, you know, one of your top wide receivers there because of the offseason continuity. And, you know, I think it's also important. Obviously, I have Deuce on my list just a little bit higher up here. Is we know this is a run-heavy offense. But, Michael, a run-heavy offense doesn't work unless you have a pass threat, too, to back the defense off.
That's right.
And so you got to have somebody step up from the receiver position to be able to allow you to do the things you want to do in a Gus Malzahn offense. And I think Deuce is going to be a really, really big part of that. Now, number 11 for me, staying on the defensive front, is Jason Jenkins, defensive end transfer from Tennessee. This guy's going to be important, man. We heard about how good he was. We heard about a lot of the potential that he has. He was just kind of buried on the depth chart. on a defensive line that had a lot of NFL caliber talent there. Obviously, he had an unfortunate injury.
Yep.
But man, from what I've heard, he has been working just nonstop. Like, he has put in so much time and effort to be back on the field and ready to go. And I just love that about him. Like, first off, that you see the work ethic that he's putting in. And when he does get back, I'm assuming probably somewhere by, you know, at least Miami, that's your other starting defensive end. And so I think it's going to be really, really important to have him performing at a high level, because still, you know, we're going to be relying a lot on James Williams being that dude on the defensive line, but you need someone else, right? Because you don't just want to be, you know, we saw this where they were able to shade coverage and chip Jared Verse whenever they, I mean, still didn't stop him a lot of times, you know, but that makes a big difference. And so I think he's going to be very important on that defensive front. Now, Michael, before we get into the top 10 here, let's bring you just a quick word, guys. I want to say, first off, thank you, everybody, right, who watched that last episode. Gosh, guys, we hit 4,000 views on there. We gained over 80 subscribers from that one episode. Man, I really can't say thank you guys enough for that. But, Michael, did you know on average, I was looking at our analytics the other day, about 60% of our viewers are not subscribed.
Oh, wow.
And so, guys, just take a moment and hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, stay connected with us. Again, we appreciate every one of you becoming a member of the family here with Plant the Spear. We're going to be bringing you a ton of preseason content. Again, like we said, we got ACC Media Days coming up. We got live streams throughout the season. We're going to do post-game recaps. You know, now is a great time to lock in with Plant the Spear. We got a website with written articles. And I just wanted to first say thank you to everybody who watched that last episode and for the 83 people, I think it was, that joined us from that episode. But Michael, there is one special shout out that I want to give here to a group of people: Ed, Henry, Kate, and Mike. These guys, they took the extra step there and they joined the PTS tribe. And so they became a member there and a channel member. And we really, really appreciate them taking that extra step to help support Plant the Spear. But my guy Ed jumped on there. Henry, we've been talking in the comments back and forth. He actually gave me some ideas for some future episodes, some things he'd like to see worked in there. And then Kate, she's been down since day one. So I appreciate her as well. And then Mike is our recent joiner there. So, man, we really appreciate it, guys. Again, you know, everything goes back into the channel, like we said last week. I just got a little kind of crazy for media days, just ordering things left and right. Like, Amazon loves me right now. But man, I'm addicted to quality, right? And I want to bring you guys the best experience that I can. And so a lot of this obviously comes out of our own pocket. We lost our sponsor after last year's tough season. And so we really appreciate all you guys helping us grow and those that took that extra step to join the tribe.
Yeah, I just want to add to that. Thank you guys so much for those of you who subscribe, those of you who watch. I mean, all of you, regardless if you're members or not, you're part of Noel Nation. You're part of the Plant the Spear world, and we're just so grateful for you. But for those who have stepped up and said, hey, I want to fuel this show. I love this show. I love what the content that you guys provide. It helps me stay attached to Florida State. I want to be a part of what keeps this going. You guys have to know that your generosity, your commitment to joining the Plant the Spear tribe is fueling this show, and it's going to get better and better as you guys continue. So for those 60% of you that are out there that are like, man, you know, I'm on the fence about this. Listen, we don't take a paycheck. We do this for free because we love, love, love Florida State. We love this for fun, and everything you give is going right back into the show, right back into the show to make it better for you. So join the tribe. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Once we get the community built up a little bit, we got some fun things planned, so we're just waiting for that to happen. So Michael, we'll trade off here and we'll get into the top. All right, I'll kick us off for the top 10. The top 10 that we feel most important players for Florida State to have a successful season in 2025. And for me, number 10 is a blank, Michael. It is the corner opposite of Jeremiah Wilson.
Because I don't know who that's going to be. I like that. I like that.
You know, obviously you got a couple of options here, some talented guys. But when you added Jeremiah Wilson, you went from having to start a couple of these guys opposite of each other to now they're both competing for the same spot. So I think that helps you get the cream of the crop there at that position. But we don't really know who that's going to be quite yet. And so we're kind of waiting to see that depth chart. That'll happen more in the fall, kind of waiting to see how things roll out there. But, man, I think that other corner is going to be big because, you know, we'll talk about Jeremiah Wilson on my list here in just a minute. But, you know, kind of given he's high on the list because I think he's important from what we talked about earlier. But man, you know, when you talk about Quindarius Jones and you talk about Edwin Joseph and all these guys that are going to be that other corner position, I think you got a lot of talent. I think you got a lot of guys that I like. Both of those guys were kind of dogs last year. I really enjoyed watching them play, but they're still young and inexperienced. And so what you don't want to happen is you have Jeremiah Wilson, who is, say, you know, hopefully if things go well, he's locked down half the field. But then you're having to devote safety help to this corner all because they because they're not holding up. So I think while Jeremiah Wilson is important, the person opposite of him is equally important to keep you from having to constantly give help that way. And so to me, whoever ends up being your starting corner there, I'm going to guess it's going to be Quindarius Jones or Edwin Joseph. I think they're very important to this defensive secondary.
Yeah. Can I throw a name in there for you? Perfect. I think it might be, I think all of those will challenge, but I would also put in Jabril Rowles in there as well.
Yeah. I've heard a lot about him too.
They've been talking a lot about him challenging for that other corner spot opposite. You know, he had 14 tackles last year. Most of that came in the win against the nobody, Charleston Southern.
Yeah.
But then that really carried over into the spring. The coaches have been praising him over and over again. And so I think he might actually challenge for that other spot opposite that.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's whoever that ends up being is going to be important. Because, you know, it's that's like they say, Michael, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And if you got someone who's just, you know, wet paper bagging it out there, you're going to be in trouble. And so that other corner position, whoever that starter may be, I think is massively important. So let's hear your number 10.
Oh, right. Yeah. So I'm going to go with Deontay McCray, number 10. Now, you're gonna see a theme again because this is now we're getting into the most important positions and the players who are in those positions. And I really think opposite of James Williams, you got to figure out who's going to be that other defensive end that's going to help you or who's coming behind James Williams as well, too. And I think Deontay McCray has to have a step up this year for that three front line, or even if it goes to an even front when it goes four down linemen. And sometimes you might even see a bare front where they go five and they bring a linebacker up on that even front. So it just depends on that. But I think Dante McCray is going to factor into that. And this is a step up year for him.
I also think he's big because he might be, at least on paper right now, based on what he's done, he's probably your best run defender. At the defensive end position. So I think he's going to be big too, especially because I think when you go into that first game, man, like Alabama breaking in a new quarterback, who, by the way, is a mobile guy, I think they're going to try run the ball a lot. And so he's going to be important, especially like we said, if Jason Jenkins is not available to be your starter, that's probably going to be either him or Diamante Diggs. Now, for me, number nine, Michael, I'm flipping back to the other side of the field that I just was on with Jeremiah Wilson. Man, this guy I think is so critical to the success of your secondary. You brought him here to be able to put him on an island and lock down team's best receivers. You know, we talked about not being able to give help over to that other side in an ideal world. Well, you're kind of planning on not having to give Jeremiah Wilson help. So if he's able to do that, it just opens up so much more for your defense. You can provide that extra run support. You can provide that extra help if you have a weakness in a one-on-one matchup. And so Jeremiah Wilson, who, by the way, like you mentioned, had more interceptions than the entire team last year.
That's right.
He's going to be really, really important to this defense. So I have him top 10 for me, man.
Yeah, listen, no one's expecting Jeremiah Wilson to have, dare I say, a number two. I'll just leave it at that. You know who number two is historically for Florida State. No one's expecting that. No one's expecting a Jalen Ramsey season. All we're expecting is, hey, if we put you on the best receiver, let's not hear much from that receiver for the rest of the game. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's 100%. Really what we do. Because if we can do that, that means we can start shading safeties over to the other side or play true middle, just depending on how he wants to do this high front with the safeties up there.
Yeah, man, now, just be a Renardo Green for me.
Exactly. Right? Great comparison. I love that. Okay, number nine, Jesse, I'm going to give you two positions in one player, and I'm going to go with Amari Williams.
I like
it. Because not only does he factor in at DE, which is where I'm really ranking him at, he also gives you an offensive side well too at tight end. And sometimes when Gus wants to go to that 12, which is, you know, one running back, two tight ends, or that 22, two running backs, you know, two tight ends, sometimes that pony look, you're going to see Amari, you know, obviously probably maybe Landon Thomas will too, but I think Amari's going to factor. The coaches have talked a lot about his two-way ability, but I think more so for me, it's going to be on the defensive side of the ball as another defensive end there. If he can really build into that type of player, I mean, he's got shades. Now, I hate doing this comparison stuff, but he's got shades of a Jared Verse. If he can figure out how to get the rest of that skill set matured with this new defense.
Yeah, and I love the pick because it's almost like I forget that he's even a defensive end, but that's actually his natural position. He only went to tight end last year because they didn't really have a whole lot at tight end last year.
That's right.
And he played really well. So, like, he's going to get on the field at the tight end position this year, too. But I'm interested to see what he can do on defense, you know, because, again, that's his natural position. He was a very highly touted recruit coming out of high school. He's got the length. He's got, you know, the strength. He can be that type of pass rushing havoc creating defensive end for you. We just haven't really seen it yet because he didn't really play any defensive snaps last year. But like you said, man, from what they're saying so far, a lot of this list that we've talked about is this is what we want to see from these guys who might be question marks. Well, that's another guy that you can add in there that creates that competitive depth on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, frankly, I think, like I talked about, I think last year you needed him on offense. You know, you had Landon Thomas, you had more drop. And so you needed him in there this year. You got Chase Lofton, you got Landon Thomas, you got Randy Pittman, you got all those guys. Marquise and Douglas is still there.
Yep.
But it's the defensive side of the ball. I think he might be more needed yeah, man, 100%. So I'm with you there. Now, number eight for me, Shaheem Brown. I put him way up on the list, Michael, because I think this is your veteran presence in the heart of your defense on the back end and the secondary. This is your you know, quarterback of the secondary, Shaheem Brown. Right. And we've seen him have a good year in 2023, and then he fell off a cliff in 2024. And if he could be back to the Shaheem of old, the Shaheem we saw in 2023, you know, when that year he had Akeem Dent next to him too, so he had a veteran next to him, man, it's his time to be that guy. And so I think it's so important for him to be able to be that veteran presence on the backside of the defense that I had to put him in the top 10.
Yeah, you know, again, and I hate to bring up the snub, but I just wonder if for a lot of those players, especially for players like Shaheem, you have the snub, you lose all your really good friends, like you mentioned, you lose it to Akeem Dent, who's a veteran back there, and then you're expected to step up and lead, and you're still, you know, that doesn't excuse the play from last season, but it definitely is a factor there. And I agree. I think Shaheem is going to be very important as the quarterback there for that safety back there as well, too. Well, my number eight is James William. See, I'm on a theme here. That defensive front, James William, coming over from Nebraska. You know, he wasn't an every down lineman, but it's going to be important for him to be an every down lineman, one through three. And if we need to go to fourth down, he needs to figure out a way to stay on the field and be productive and get not just, you know, get some tackles. I mean, disrupt the quarterback, be fear, make them forget about the other side of that line so that they're focusing and double teaming you. That then helps a Amari Williams, that then helps a Deontay McCray, that then helps the other DEs that are there, right? You become a force. He is my number eight most important player for 2025.
I love that pick, man. I'm going to save a little bit of the sauce because he's coming up real soon for me. Okay. I'll just say that. But no, I think you're 100% right, man. First off, you got to have someone who can get home. You know, there is no better case from what a pass rush can do for you than watching Florida State in 2023 and watching State in 2024.
That's right.
And another thing that you mentioned that I hadn't thought of until now with this type of season or with 2025 anyway, is I actually went back last year about midway through the season. And I looked at Pat Payton's stats when he had Jared Verse next to him and when he didn't. And Jared Verse made Pat Payton a lot better. And so if James Williams can be that guy to make everyone across from him a lot better because they're too busy worried about you, again, one of the most productive pass rushers in the country last year, that would be huge. It's just like you said, man, can he become that three down defensive end for you?
That's right.
And maybe on the fourth too. But his success to the season, because, you know, this is a guy where, you know, where we talk about, like with a Salchuk or with, you know, maybe a certain guy at a certain position where you're banking on this guy.
That's right. You are.
You are absolutely banking on James Williams coming in and being a dominant starter for you. And so that's why I think he is very important to this defensive front. Now, number seven for me, Michael, I have linebacker making an appearance here, Elijah Herring.
Hey!
I think Elijah Herring is going to be critical to this defense because I think he's going to probably end up being your green dot guy, if I had to make a guess. You know, Omar Graham could probably start. He wasn't in Tony White's defense last year. Blake Nicholson could probably start. He wasn't in there either. Neither was Elijah. So everyone's starting from the same point, right? Everyone has to learn this defense together. So there isn't like one guy outside of Stephon Thompson that has that advantage of like, okay, he's going to be the green dot guy because he's been playing in this defense for 3 years. And maybe that is Stephon Thompson. But I think Elijah Herring is probably going to be the guy who's getting you lined up, who's making the defensive play calls. He's going to be in the heart of that defense at the linebacker position, probably a middle linebacker because he's not the greatest in coverage, but he's a good run stopper. So you kind of want to keep him out of that one-on-one situation. Again, just like you saw with DJ Lundy last year, but I think he's a much higher upside guy than DJ Lundy. Again, led Memphis in tackles last year, led Tennessee in tackles the year before that. You know, we've talked about this, man. We're actually excited to actually have decent linebacker
play.
I think it's going to be critical because, you know, this is a guy right now that we just talked about, like with James Williams. Man, I'm taking Elijah Herring to the bank right now.
That's right.
And if he ends up not being good, yes, I like you have some depth there, but this is a guy that I'm taking to the bank. And so you need him to work out because of what we're kind of putting into him, bringing him here as that veteran presence. So, man, I got Elijah Herring number seven.
Yeah, I agree, man. And listen, he owes us a big time year since he beat us last year. Okay. I'm not leaving here without him getting, you know, at least 100 tackles, 7 sacks, and like 4 interceptions. All right, Elijah Herring. Okay. At number seven for me is a person that Mike Norvell, head coach Mike Norvell, said was the number one recruiting win for Florida State coming into this season, Darryl Jackson. Okay. It was so important to get this dude. He, Jesse, you know this because you're the stats guy. He was ranked second in Pro Football Focus, only behind Azarrié Thomas, who was picked in the third round in the NFL draft, as the best player defensive side for Florida State. It was so important. Now, he started last year off really slow. We thought, man, Florida State wasted their money. He wasn't the player we thought he was. And then by the end of the season, even though they were losing, Your boy was doing some stuff. He was dominating. He was wrecking up offensive line. If that Darryl Jackson shows up this year, holy cow. That motor, that consistency, that power, that just ferocity. I mean, if he can be that same type of player that we saw the second half of the season, look out. They're going to have to double team him, which is going to open up one-on-one coverage on the ends. I mean, you just name it. And I know Tony White is going to take advantage of that. So let's hope that that version of Darryl Jackson shows up for this season.
Oh, man, you're 1,000% right. And because it's a lot of it is what they're putting into him. They this is like their guy. They pushed all the chips to the center of the table on Darryl Jackson being the centerpiece of that defensive front. And newsflash, I still got a few slots to go, so we're going to get there. Number six for me is James Williams. I have him high on the list, Michael, because, again, you talk about the difference between 23 and 24 was having a guy that could get home. You had a Jared Verse who could just wreak havoc. You know, if he couldn't sack the quarterback, he'd sack him with the offensive tackle. You know, you need a guy like that on this defensive front because it just makes a massive difference. And like we said, James Williams was the most, from a percentage standpoint, the most productive pass rusher in Division I last year. And so if he can be that guy for you. Now, again, I'm interested to see what his run defense looks like. But from a pass rush standpoint, if this guy can be a Jared Verse type of guy for you who can get home on those pass plays and, you know, you can never sit back there comfortable because you know he's coming, man, I think that's going to change what your defense can do. And again, like, then you don't have to blitz as much if you've got this guy who's just a sack machine. So we'll see, man. But I think James Williams' success on the defensive front, we talk about this all the time on the show. The game is won in the trenches, man. It's won and lost in the trenches. And so that's why I have I got some defensive and some offensive linemen here real high up on this list. But man, for me, number six is James Williams.
Yeah. I mean, again, like I said, he is going to be very important along the trenches there, creating one-on-one havoc so that they have to double team him as well too. Man, you imagine him and Darryl Jackson actually live up to their billing. That other side of that line is going to be real dangerous. You're going to be able to be a sack feast on the other side of that. Now, Jesse, we're going to stay in the trenches, but we're just going to move to the other side of the ball. You know how I always say the two most important positions outside of the quarterback is the defensive and offensive line. Yep. And I'm going to slot at number six. Now, we're not sure if he's starting, but we believe that, or at least I believe he has the inside track to one of the guard positions, and that's Adrian Medley, who came over from UCF, started 19 games with them, and Herb Hand handpicked him to come over to Florida State. Yep. He knows that Gus Malzahn offense. He knows how they want to run the ball. I think he's got the inside track. That guard position, whether it's right or left guard, is going to be very important for this offense to actually be able to move the ball running wise.
Yeah, I agree, man. And people forget how good he was good in that offense, yep, too. He was a top 15 graded guard in the Big 12 last year. That's right. And so you brought him over here as a guy who's a veteran, like you said, very familiar with the offense. And I think he's one that can kind of help get everybody else up to speed because he's going to know the play calls. You know, I love what Luke Pettibon brings at center, but like, you know, for making the calls and things like that. But Adrian Medley has played in this UCF offense for multiple years. So I think him being good is going to be successful. And when you look at the guy that he's replacing, Terrence Ferguson last year, who I think had a PFF grade of, well, they stopped counting because it was so bad. You know, that kind of upgrade would be big in an offense where you got run the ball. And so, yeah, man, it's huge that he succeeds. And so for me, number five, getting to the top five here is Deuce Robinson at number five. And I just think it's huge. And this comes back to what I talked about earlier. In a run-heavy offense, you still got to have a pass threat to open things up. And this is the guy that it really seems like they're banking on to be their guy. We've heard so much this offseason about the chemistry between him and Tommy Castellanos. We've heard so much about, you know, the big part he's going to play in this offense. We've heard so much about Deuce Robinson this offseason that it sounds like they are, again, putting a lot into this. Gus Malzahn typically likes really kind of dominant wide receiver. He will obviously spread the ball around some, but typically that one guy takes the lead, and I think that's going to be Deuce Robinson this year. And he's poised for a big year if he's ready to step up and fill those shoes. But, man, again, I think when you look at this offense as a totality, if you want to be able to run the ball, you need a pass threat. And I think that's going to start with Deuce Robinson. He's not the only one. I think Squirrel White's going to be really good, and I think he got a lot of other receivers I'm excited about. LaWayne McCoy, you know, a lot of these other guys that we haven't talked about. But I think you are really kind of hanging your hat on Deuce Robinson being good this year.
Yeah, I agree. Again, I talked about him as he was my number 11th player. You know, he has to be able to take the top off. You know, the only thing I worry about him is Florida State has not done good with legacy kids in the last while.
Yeah, I know.
It has been a while since a legacy Florida State kid like actually popped off. So that's my only concern about Deuce. But listen, hey, if they can leverage him the right way and he can do what he needs to do, then I'm all for it. Well,
yeah, and I will say this too. I think with Deuce, I think one of the reasons that you're also putting I'm putting a lot of importance on him too is, you know, again, knock on wood, not to be superstitious, but like Squirrel White's been banged up throughout his career.
That's right. True.
And so you can't guarantee he's going to be there for every single game. I hope because I think he's going to be great. But man, I think you're looking at him to be your Mr. Reliable, right?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, I like that. All right, I'm staying with the offensive line. Number five, another guard, Richie Leonard IV. Yeah. I think that's what the IV stands for, right?
The fourth?
That's right. Okay. So Richie Leonard
IV. There's a bunch of them Richie Leonards running around.
A bunch of them.
Can the other ones play offensive line?
Yeah, come on. Let's get them. I mean, this dude transferred. I think he transferred from Florida, if I remember correctly. Yep. Yeah, and we'll forgive him for that. He started the year as a starting offensive lineman, got injured, and you notice – now, listen, that offensive line wasn't great, but you notice a significant downturn when he was out of the offensive line play consistency. So now that he's back, hopefully fully healthy, he didn't get a chance to play this spring, but they anticipate having him full ready to go when fall camp start. I mean, he has played in 35 games. He started 17. He's going to be core as a guard, whether right or left, because Gus Malzahn likes to run counter as well too, and the guard plays heavily in that, whether you run it either way. And so he's going to be very important hopefully he's healthy to help this offensive line take the next step to get better.
100% agree, man. Richie Leonard is going to be big, right, in this offensive line because he was your guy last year before he got hurt. He was doing pretty well, had a PFF grade of 65 on the season, even though, you know, just four games. And I think he's going to be good. You know, it's funny. I don't know if it was just throwing shade or not, but remember I can never say this kid's name, the Princely Unamanian kid that transferred out of Florida.
Yep.
You know, when he left Florida to come to us, obviously Gator fans were kind of trashing him. Oh, he wasn't no good anyway or whatever. Well, Princely had said, like, no, he was the best offensive lineman I went against at Florida. So he has the potential to be really good, almost 1,500 career snaps of experience. This is the guy that you need to be good. I do like some of the other pieces that you have at guard. You know, yeah. I think Jacob Rizzi's a name to watch as well, too. Played true. Pretty good for you last year. But, man, I do think that him being that veteran presence, and there's a lot of veterans on this offensive line that I really like. So, man, that's huge. And Richie Leonard being good and being healthy all season would be great for this offensive line. Absolutely. So I love the pick there, man. For me, let's go with number four here. Now, this is one of the ones where I cheated a little bit on my homework, Michael, but I'll explain why, right? Number four is the running backs all together, right? Everyone in one group. We're putting everybody in the same bag here. And the reason I say that, Michael, is the reason I start with I have them at number four is because this is obviously a run-first offense. You got to have something working here for these running backs, right? You can't not run the ball in Gus Malzahn's offense or you're not going to have a good season. So who you have back there to successfully run the ball is vitally important. And we've seen the RJ Harveys. We've seen, you know, whatever the guy that struck the premature Heisman pose there for Auburn as well. You've seen Michael Dyer. You've seen them have some really good running backs that made a big difference in this offense. Now, my justification for having all of them in here is I think Gavin Sawchuk is probably your number one back to start the season. Yeah. He's been the most productive throughout his career. He's got the most impressive stats. He's a highly touted recruit, consensus four-star, and all that type of stuff. But you don't really know what you're getting because he's never been a consistent starter, right? And he's coming off injury, so you hope he's pretty good. With Kroma is probably your most talented high upside back in the entire group.
Yeah,
he wasn't even on campus in spring.
That's right.
I don't know how much you're going to see him in the Bama game. You'll probably see him in a couple of other games. And then if things look good, he'll probably get an increased workload and maybe even be your starter by the end of the year because I think he's that good. But, Michael, after those two, I think it's kind of like a spaghetti method, right? Like, you don't not like what you got, but you just kind of throw it against the wall and see what sticks, right? Because I think Roydell Williams is probably better than what we saw last year behind that crap offensive line. He put up like 500 yards at Bama. He's a strong guy. He's good at breaking tackles. Then, you know, again, you know, I've been a Keziah Holmes fan since he stepped foot on campus. We just haven't really ever seen it come fruition. Yep. You know, Sam Singleton is a guy that is super fast. He's fun to watch, but hasn't really done it yet. Then you still got Cam Davis, former five-star. That's like just kind of hanging out. We don't really know what he is. He needed to improve from last year. But again, what can you judge behind that offensive line? And so the reason I put all the running backs in there is because, man, like really from about one to five, it's just kind of a crapshoot this year until we see it on the field. But I like all one through five, but they are such a vital part to this offense that I just group them all together. I don't need all five of you to be good.
Yeah.
Just give me like two of them. Just give me two good ones, right? And that'll do a lot for this offense.
Yeah, listen, I'm with you on that. I think this running back room right now, you got 8 billion of them. They feel interchangeable. They feel interchangeable because we don't know. You know, we got bits and pieces from Gavin Sawchuk. We know a little bit about Roydell Williams. We've seen Keziah Holmes just a tad bit. We've seen Sam Singleton, I think, on one drive, I remember. And then obviously Kuzma is a freshman coming in. So we really don't know what we got. Here's my thing. If the offensive line is better, the running backs will be better. That's my whole point. I really believe that if we have a better offensive line, we'll have a better running back, and then they'll just be a stable backs. Gus Malzahn went out to get Gavin Sawchuk. I think he's going to be the bell cow. I think he's going to be the one that you ride, but I also think you're going to see Kuzma be brought up along the way. I think Roydell will kind of be that mentor to help him get there as well, too. And I think by the end of the season, if the offensive line does its thing, you'll see this combination of those three kind of being the bigger backs that play in this offense. And speaking of the offensive line, let me tell you who my number four is. We're going to go with he came from the fastest rising program in ACC history. Yeah, Luke Pettibon at center. He's number four. I have him at number four, and here's why. He's talented, but he's not like the greatest center of all time. But the boy has played 38 college football games, including 21 starts over the last two seasons. And in a Gus Malzahn offense where you have to make the communication calls on the offensive line super fast because Gus Malzahn wants to go turbo, as he likes to call it, turbo, or I think they call it fire. You know, they call it fire where they're just going, right? You got to have a center who's smart, who has been in some kind of quick spread offense and can make those calls there. And I think Luke is going to play an important part of that. So I have him at number four.
I think that's a great pick, man, because he is going to be huge to the success of this offense. He is the quarterback of the offensive line there at the center position, the actual top graded ACC returning center in the ACC. So this was a massive pickup for Florida State. And again, I know people will hear the name Wake Forest and think, oh, well, how good can he be? I mean, he's playing against the same teams you did last year, and he was a significant upgrade from what you had there with Maurice Smith from a stat perspective. And if you go back and watch the last episode, or if you already watched it, you would know that he was one of our impact players for 2025 just because of his history of how good he has been. So, man, I love the pick. I think that's a great one there. Now, remember what I said, Michael, where I thought 1 through 3 were kind of head and shoulders above 4 through 20, right?
Yep.
Just because of how much they're put – how much weight of this team they're bearing on their shoulders.
Yep.
And so for me, Michael, number three is Darryl Jackson.
Ooh.
And it's because of what we talked about earlier. They pushed all their chips into the center of the table for Darryl Jackson. They went and got him back out of the portal. They did not sign any defensive tackles from the portal other than a JUCO, the Tylan Coleman kid. They're kind of rolling with what they got because they're betting on Darryl Jackson. They've made comments publicly where they you know, are projecting him as a high NFL draft pick. They got high hopes for Darryl Jackson.
That's right.
And we've seen glimpses of what he can be. We just really haven't seen it consistently yet.
Yeah.
But even when you look back to last year, he led your defensive line in pressures. He led your defensive line in stops. So he is got that potential to be that impact player. I mean, goodness, he's what, like 7 foot, 500 pounds or whatever? He's 6'6", 350? So, like, everything is there, man. Everything is there. And having a dominant nose tackle in a 3-3-5 defense would do wonders for you. So I put that up there for Darryl Jackson because I think they are putting a lot of weight on his shoulders in this defense. And if things don't go well for him, I don't love all the answers that you have behind him. I really don't, because then you're talking about guys who maybe aren't big time impact guys, or even down to Kevin Wynn, who's a freshman this year, who I think is going to be good. But man, I think the weight of the defense is on Darryl Jackson's shoulders, and so he's top three for me.
Listen, I totally get why you put him up that high, and if it wasn't for the way my brain was thinking when we were putting this list together, I probably would have had him that high. If you're right, if he does not show up, if we get the Darryl Jackson of the first half of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to get run all over.
Yep.
Right. And so it's going to be imperative of him to be that Derek with the high motor, the consistency. And as we said, he could have gone to the NFL. He probably would have been drafted in the late rounds, you know, round four to later. This is an opportunity to solidify you being in the top three rounds, maybe even top two rounds.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, if you get drafted in the top two rounds coming out of Florida State, I mean, we have a history of putting, you know, top defensive tackles in the league, okay?
Out of Odell,
Out of Odell. So this is your opportunity. Odell's still there. He's still, you know, back in the scenes coaching, whatever they call it now. Like, this is your money-making year, Darryl. You've got to show up.
Now, yeah, this year is just as big for him.
Yes.
As it is for us. But, yeah, that's, man, right. I agree. And the thing is, you think back to 2022 – when Fabian Lovett got hurt in that LSU game, and then you really struggled to stop the run up the middle because you had lost your best defensive tackle. So Darryl Jackson, not only being good, but being healthy and available, is massive for this defensive line.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Number three, I'm going to go with another massive person for the offensive line. And we're going to go with the Ole Miss transfer, Micah.
Love this guy.
Ellis. I am so excited about this dude. I mean, 2,154 snaps.
Isn't he like 6'7", 370?
He's 6'7", 355 pounds. My gosh. He had a 71.5 PFF grade, was the fourth highest of any full-time starter on the Rebels on the Ole Miss offense. I mean, the dude has played 33 games, 29 starts at right tackle. The tackle position, right?
Yeah,
this is Tommy looking down and not having to worry about somebody hitting him in his front side, right? Or when they, you know, when they swing that offense, he's, you know, running with them on the side there. I'm telling you, this dude is massively important. I'm going to get to the other massively important offensive line next, but this one is important. And I think Micah Pettis, I'm really excited about what he brings to the table.
He's big, man. He is huge for this offense. There is no way around it. I even think he might be your starting left tackle just because I think he's probably the better of the two, right?
I almost put him at left tackle, but I had him at right tackle.
I think he's going to be your starting left tackle just because of, you know, I mean, just how big and how good he has been. You know, he was a top 10 graded tackle in the SEC last year. He would have been one of the best returning offensive tackles in the SEC this year. You know, this is a guy that frankly has went and they beat Georgia last year. You know what I mean? Right. He's played at the highest level. He's won. That's not necessarily, you know, saying the SEC or whatever, but just saying like in general, he's been on some, in some big games and some big situations. And so I think he is going to be huge. This was a great pickup in the offseason. I know the Rebel fans were a little sour about this one. You know, oh, he gets a lot of penalties and whatnot. And I was like, he didn't even have the most penalties on your whole team. but no, I think it's going to be huge. He's a mountain of a man. You know, I line up across from someone 6'7", 355. Michael, I'm running the other way.
I'm done.
I'm running to the water cooler. That's a big old dude. So, yeah, I love it, man. For me, number two, Michael, look, it's the guy who's behind the curtain, man. It's the guy pulling the strings. It's Tommy Castellanos, the quarterback, right? I think he's the number two guy on my list because if he struggles, everything's going to struggle, right? You pushed your chips in on this guy. You could have went out and had, you know, we talked about all the different guys we talked about you bringing in, and you chose Tommy Castellanos on purpose because you thought he was a good fit for this offense, and you better hope it works out because I think one of the ways, you know, when you really talk about the quarterback position, right, I think you just look at it as we want to get to 8 wins. We a minimum, a floor of 8 wins, but we also want to get to maybe 9 wins. Do you have the quarterback to do that? Mm. And I think that's the part where, you know, you really just have to kind of sit back and say, is this the guy that can get us to 8 wins to 9 wins. Now, Boston College, I think, was 7-6 in 2023 when he first started. So I also look at Tommy Castellanos from a standpoint of you played at I know they beat us last year. I get that.
They're still pedestrian in talent.
Right. But like they are still pedestrian in talent. Exactly. That's a great way to put it. He got them to 7 wins.
That's right.
So with a better supporting cast, he should be able to get you to 8 or 9 wins. He should, in theory. But you need him to stay healthy. You need him to stay available. And a lot of that is because I don't trust Brock Glenn.
Yep.
And Kevin Sperry is a true freshman.
Yep.
So I think the weight of, you know, like I talked about with Daryl Jackson, the weight of the defense is on his back. I think the weight of the offense is on Tommy Castellanos' back. And let's be honest, you flapped your gums a little bit in this offseason.
That's right.
So you got to back it up, man. It's time. You got to make them throws. You got to be able to run that ball. I mean, we saw him run for 1,100 yards at Boston College. I think you'll blend a little bit of what we saw, you know, with Gus Malzahn's offense of running and throwing. But if Tommy doesn't succeed, this offense doesn't succeed. And that leads us right back to where we were at last year. And a lot of some of these guys, Michael, is because I don't necessarily trust who's behind them, which is like what we see with Daryl Jackson. I don't really trust what's behind you. And so I don't trust what's behind Tommy Castellanos either. So you got to have him come through for you or this offense is probably dead in the water.
Yeah, I mean, man, I am shocked that he's your number two. So I'm so curious at who your number one is. Listen, I have Tommy somewhere, so I'm gonna save my bullets for that one. But let me just say is that last year we talked ourselves into believing that DJ Uiagalelei could be, you know, what we thought he needed to be for Florida State. We looked at stats. I remember we did a whole QB show about him.
Let's just forget about that. Yeah,
we made ourselves believe that. It ain't happening this year, bro. And so with Tommy, there is going to have to be believable evidence from day one, right? Okay, so I'll get to him in just a second. At number two for me. Now that you said Michael Pettis might actually be slotted at left tackle, I'm like, because I want to switch him. But right now, I had believed that Gunnar Hansen, number two, was going to be the left tackle. I mean, you don't go and get a 3-year starter at SEC out of an SEC school to come and who played left tackle most of those 3 years to come to Florida State to not be your left tackle, right? I mean, this dude beat Alabama. Let's be reminded of that.
Yep.
He went up against that defense last year and held true and was able to do that. 3-year starter, 6'5", 330 pounds, one of the best graded out offensive linemen last year on that team. I mean, you bring him to protect Tommy's blind side, and it's going to be super important because Tommy's going to have to, you know, have a great feel. If he can't trust that offensive line, he's going to leave the pocket too early, you know, not going to allow things to develop. He's going to be running around, which we know Gus Malzahn wants to use a lot of his legs, but we want those to be more designed than they are all scramble. So we're going to need that left tackle to be, and that's where Gunner or Micah Pettis comes into play. But right now I have Gunner Hansen slotted here.
Yeah, and he could very well be your left tackle. He could stay at his natural position, which was left tackle. He did start a few games at right tackle for Vandy last year.
He did.
Yeah. For me, I would probably rather have Micah Pettis protecting your blind side than otherwise. But he's just as vitally important because he could be on either side of the line there. And again, he's just massively important because this offensive line, without it, nothing goes, right? It is the gatekeeper of this offense, and he's going to be a big part of it, especially those tackle positions, man. You cannot have your quarterback sitting back there getting creamed because, just like we said, man, with the last one where I talked about Tommy Castellanos, look, love you, Tommy, but he's 5'10", 190. Like, he's not the most – he's not, you know, DJU can stand back there, you know, and a 6'4". And that turned in from DJ Uiagalelei to – Uyung, go away. I think he's huge. And you know what, Michael? The thing is, like, you're probably hearing my list right now, right? And you're probably like, man, we talk about offensive line all the time, and this guy hasn't named a single offensive lineman
I was wondering.
Well, guess what, Michael? I cheated on the test because I wrote the test and I can do it. Number one, side to side, all five of them, the entire offensive line. This is by far the number one
and
most important,
I agree,
of the entire season, because without the offensive line, nothing else matters. We saw this last year. You couldn't throw the ball to drop it because there was pressure in your face. You couldn't run the ball to open up the pass, so you had the opportunity to drop
it. That's right.
You got to have an offensive line that's going to work. This is a Gus Malzahn offense that's going to rely on the run game. You got to have a at least average to above average college offensive line. You got to be able to pass block. Yeah. I mean, Tommy's going to be able to do some things back there. It's going to be more Jordan Travis-esque than DJU. He's not a statue. Right. He can evade pressure, but you got to give him time to be able to read the defense. You know, he's probably going to move the pocket a lot because love you, Tommy. I don't know that you can see over the line a whole lot, but I do think, man, the success in 2025 starts and stops with the offensive line. Absolutely. And, you know, we talked about this in a prior show, that piece that I did, Trouble in the Trenches, where you can really point to Florida State struggles historically by their struggles on the offensive line. Man, without it this year, you're probably in the same boat you were last year as the offense. You got to have an offensive line this year, or there's no point talking about the rest of the offense.
Man, if it wasn't for who I picked number one, I would totally agree. And you wrote the test, so you're a cheater, but that's okay. You can do that. Because I would have put the offensive line just like that at number one, too, as well.
But I wanted to tell you, but we agreed not to share our picks.
That's right. You're right. But you're absolutely right, Jesse. You're absolutely right. I mean, last year you had a quarterback. Now, when I think about the offensive woes, I say that, you know, 10% is DJ. 80% is the offensive line and 10% is the wide receivers, because they were dropping balls. But like you said, they didn't even have enough throws to drop the balls to get it.
And even when DJU wasn't good, the offense didn't get any better when they replaced the quarterback.
Correct. And so it actually became more of the offensive line. I mean, the offensive line was so bad that DJ started seeing bricks as wide receivers and throwing them to him. I mean, that's how much he got hit last year. I mean, it was ridiculous.
And Luke and Brock ran for their life every single play.
All the time. You know, Brock was holding on to the ball. I just saw this incredible stat the other day that said that Florida State was one of the highest rated teams, and this is not a good rate, in holding the ball. So even when the offensive line did give them time to make throws, they were holding onto the ball. And this was mostly Luke, because the wide receivers couldn't get open for them.
Yeah. So, And when I looked it up last year in the Power Four, of the highest pressure rates allowed on a quarterback, right? The quarterbacks that face the highest pressure rate, Florida State used three quarterbacks. Well, they had three of the top 10 spots because the offensive line was that bad.
Gosh, I mean, it was just terrible. And so you're right. The offensive line is, in my book, again, those trenches are the most important. But the reason why I went with the gum flapper, the word slinger,
Tommy Talker
is because if you're going to talk that ish, as the kids like to say, against Alabama.
Yeah,
bro, you got to back it up. I mean, you got to bring it, right? So you're going to come. Now, here's the thing I will give you credit for. Like we said earlier, he played with a subpar talented pool at Boston College. No offense to Boston College, but you're subpar in talent, okay? He played with a subpar, and he got them the 7-6 wins. This is going to be the first time he plays with the best talent he's ever played with, okay, in his college career.
And an offense built for him.
Thank you, Jesse. An offense literally designed. Like Gus Malzahn went to God and said, God, if there was a way to use Tommy, what should I do? And he said, do this. And Gus Malzahn does it.
When he asked for a quarterback, that's what he got.
That's what he designed.
Like, all right, big guy, maybe you could have made him 6 inches taller, but you know, whatever.
Whatever, we'll take it. This offense is designed for him. The wide receivers were recruited specifically for his throwing ability. The offensive line is actually, yes, they're big, but they're also mobile. They can move because you're going to have a mobile quarterback. This whole thing has been designed around you, Tommy. You are the trigger man. So if you're going to flap your gums, if you're going to be Tommy Talker, you're going to call Alabama out, you better back it up. He is the most important because if this doesn't work, like you said, I don't trust Brock and Kevin is a freshman. This is over if he's not good.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. It's got to happen. And you've seen with Gus where he can do some magic with maybe some not so great converted DB at quarterback.
That's right.
So it doesn't always have to be Cam Newton, you know. And I was watching some cutups the other day of Cam, and like, man, having just a dominant runner in that offense is just something different. And so it's huge, man. I mean, I really want to see Tommy step up and take control of this offense. And if he does, it's going to take you as far. That's, you know, if the offensive line pans out, just say they're average, then a lot of that weight gets shifted to Tommy's shoulders, and you're going to go as far as he can take you. But like I said, man, for me, it all starts on that offensive line. And again, I wrote the test so I can cheat on it, but I'm sorry about that. So now the last thing I want to get into here, we had some fun with that. Our top 20 players. Let us know what you think in the comments. If you're watching on YouTube, if we're crazy or not, let us know maybe your top five or something like that. I'd love to hear y'all's list as well. I apologize if maybe I forgot somebody, but that's what I'm looking at. There's just so much unknown with this team right now, man. It's just really hard to say. We don't even really have all the starters penciled in yet. We feel like we have a good grip on where they're at, but that's our top 20, man. And that list is going to make or break Florida State season this year. And, of course, I know that encompasses basically most of the team, but, man, in the order of importance, those guys got to fall into place. So the last thing I want to talk about here before we get ready to wrap this show up here is the MLB draft happened last week, the 2025 draft. Florida State set some records in this. I'm going to throw a slide up here. We're just going to spend a few minutes on it. 11 total selections, most in program history, most in the ACC, tied with Arkansas for the most in the country. 19 selections in the past 2 years is a program record. Obviously, you see Jamie Arnold here goes in the first round, 11th overall pick to the A's. Alex Lodi. I love the pick. I don't really love the organization that he's going to, but hopefully when they move to Vegas, that'll reignite that franchise there. I love this next one. Alex Lodi's round two pick 60 to the Braves. I think he's going to be a star in Atlanta. There's a ton of Florida State fans that are also Braves fans, so that's going to be good there. The unicorn, Cam Leiter, who we've heard about, but we never really saw, round two, pick 65 to the Dodgers. Max Williams, round three, pick 78 to the Marlins. I think that's a good spot for Max there. He's a guy that's been an offensive power plant for you. Then he's joined by Drew Ferreau, round four, pick 108, also to the Marlins. Got that South Florida pipeline going on there. Peyton Prescott, little surprised he went this high. But this is a guy who, you know, he touched 98 this year. He is coming off Tommy John. But man, he was high 90s. So he's probably worth taking a chance on. Round five, pick 163 to the Mets. Keeping that South Florida pipeline open is Joey Vellini, round six, pick 168 to the Marlins. I saw some people joking like it's maybe the Miami Noles, and I was like, that's gross to say. But I'm happy for Vellini there. Evan Crest was a surprise, man. I thought he was going to come back next year. I mean, obviously he got injured early in the season, had to have Tommy John himself. I did not see him going in the draft. Round 15 picks 462 to the Guardians. You know, they can still come back. They can still.
I was just going to say, I think they can still come back. Yeah,
they still can. From what I read by Brett Nevitt, who he covers baseball very well for 247, says that he does expect everyone to sign. So it's going to be interesting to see if they sign. Speaking of interesting, man, the most interesting pick for me was Gage Harrelson going all the way down to the 16th round. I think he's a much better player than round 16. I would like to see him come back, but then he's a senior, so he doesn't really have any leverage. He kind of has to take what he gets there. But round 16 to the Angels. Jackson West goes round 16 to the Blue Jays. Kind of think he might could probably come back and do a little bit more for himself there. It didn't really even start all year. Obviously, they had Hunter Carnes working in Shemalia there as well early in the season too. Mason Martinez rounds out the draft picks, round 16, 474 to the Reds. You know, hey, good for you, buddy. I don't, you know what I mean? He was a, I don't trust our bullpen, but hey, apparently they do in Cincinnati. So I like it. But yeah, man, just a couple quick things here. Like I said, Jamie Arnold, first pitcher taken in the first round for FSU since 2014. You set all kinds of records there. You know, the unfortunate part, Michael, is if they don't come back, man, you got a lot of holes to fill on this baseball roster now, but you also have a ton of pieces that I really like. You've already went out into the portal and got some, you've racked up on some nice arms. But at the end of the day, man, this is a win for the program, right?
Absolutely.
Because now selling Florida State to recruits and transfers around the country is going to be easy. You come to Tallahassee, you get developed because, you know, a lot of these guys they brought in, they developed them, and they sent them to the majors. You come in, you get developed, and you go play professionally. And so, you know, it was a great showing for Florida State. And I know this is what I had to add this in the social media post when I did. Like, look, we get it, guys. I understand. We are not Miami. We are not trying to go for the most draft picks or the best recruiting class. You got to win a national championship. And trust me, I know Link wants to win it bad too, but this is only year three. He's going into year four, and you already have produced 19 MLB draft picks in 2 years. That's how you get there, is finding a pipeline for talent, developing it, getting it to the majors, and then everyone else wants to come play for you too. So, man, they're building something in Tallahassee, and I think Link will get us that trophy eventually. But just a great showing in the draft, man. Proud weekend to be a Seminole.
Yeah, and the words of the great Jalen Ramsey, if you a baseball player and you ain't going to Florida State, what is you doing? Like, I mean, come on. Like, you just saw right there. I mean, yes, we're not trying to be mad. We don't, you know, it's not all about the draft picks, but they just put the most in program history in the draft, and that team was one out. Not, let me take that back. One strike away.
Yeah. Yeah.
From going back to the College World Series again this year in the third year of Link's coaching at Florida State. And so if you're a baseball player out there, you're a transfer portal player, a high school player, you want to be developed, you want a chance to play in the College World Series, and you want a chance at being highly drafted in the MLB draft, what is you doing? Come to Florida State.
Yeah, exactly. And again, like you said, man, when you look at Florida State's baseball history, for this to be the most draft picks ever, that's really impressive. And that's the only time they ever really got close was back when they had more than 20 rounds. And that's a lot of guys are taken out the 20th round. So huge showing for them. Just really excited about the future of that baseball program. You know, I love what they're doing over there. Obviously, Link, I think, knows there's some things to address, and they've done that in the portal so far. But, yeah, man, that's going to be it for the draft. Just, again, congratulations to all those guys getting their opportunity to live out that dream and play professionally. Can't wait for some of these guys. You know, where I'm at, Michael, we have a ton of minor league teams. So some of these guys I may get a chance to see in the minor leagues there as well.
Not Cam Leiter.
We'll see. I won't be able to see him. I'll show him. I'll be like, I saw him on the roster, but I don't know. He just hangs out in the dugout. I don't know what he really looks like. But now, final question of the day, Michael. And I told you I had a doozy, so I saved this one. Michael has not heard it yet. I kept this one to myself. Football related. And Michael, this, you know, in your head, when you hear this, this should be an easy one for you to answer.
Okay.
But it's a brain versus heart dilemma here, and it's going to hurt you to say the most logical answer, or at least it's going to hurt me. It's going to pain me eternally to say the answer that I should say in my head.
Okay.
But first I want to know, Michael, who is your most hated rival? Now, look, I don't love the Gators 1,000%.
Oh, yeah.
I'll push them down the stairs if I get a chance. but most of y'all know, my blood boils over Miami. I just cannot stand that program, their fan base, anything about it. So who takes the cake for you, Michael?
Gosh, man. Listen, I really do not like Miami. I really do not like Miami. I grew up like the wide rights. That was me in middle school, high school. But man, when Tebow Mania came,
Those are dark days.
Are dark days. And I had neighbors and friends who were Gator fans. Oh, so for me, it's literally 1A Florida, 1B Miami.
That's a good way to put it. And, you know, when I talk about unicorns, it's kind of like Miami fans. I mean, I know they're not any good. I just don't know any of them because they just don't exist.
That's right.
But no, so it's good to know that, because now here's the question at hand, Michael. And okay. It's a tough one. Okay. It's a two-parter. So you just listen to kind of the whole thing here. Would you rather beat your rival 10 times in a row, but they win a national championship in that time and you don't? Or would you rather lose to your rival 10 times in a row, but you win a national championship in that time and they don't?
Oh, God.
That's a dilemma. Because initially I want to say FM, FFM, yes. And there ain't no way in heck I'm choosing to lose to Miami 10 times in a row. But your head should always want that national championship because it's so much better for the program. This is a dilemma, Michael. I don't know that I can choose.
Here's my thought process.
Here's the other thing. I will say this, though.
Go ahead.
I also don't ever want to see Miami win another national championship. So that's in there too. Or Florida for that matter.
That's the thing, because so we can say, like, when we think about the last 20 years of Miami, one of the things we got to claim on is, yes, we've beaten them, but they've also beat us in that 20 years, but we got a national title.
Yeah.
Right.
And they still pull out that dusty old set of five rings that are carved out of wood and stone from back when they didn't have face masks or whatever.
Exactly. And then when I think of Florida, their last national title was 08, right? We've had one since 2013. They've beaten us, we've beaten them, but we have the most recent national title in the state. Yeah. But man, I might losing to 10 straight
10 and get times. I told you, man, I almost can't even call it. Like, it's so hard.
Wait, what's your answer?
But, you know, the caveat comes with, if you beat them 10 times in a row, they also win a national championship. Oh, God. So, like, it's hard, man. I can't. This is one of the toughest questions I've ever had to answer, because my head says I should pick us winning a national championship because they won't win a national championship.
That's right.
But losing to scum you 10 times in a row, ugh, vomit.
So even the year we win a title, we lose to them.
Yep. Just like, think of Ohio State, Michigan last year. Oh, Michigan loves to hold that over Ohio State's head, but Ohio State still gets to say we won the national championship.
Gosh. Well, okay, here's how I'm going to answer this, and I'm not going to like it. I don't like it. Just even, like, I want to puke just even thinking about it. The thing is, those wins, they last a lifetime, and it's great to be able to say, oh, yeah, we beat Florida or Miami 10 straight times.
Yep.
But that national title, man, how many times you see your team? I mean, you look at, okay, so take out Alabama. So if you're an Alabama fan, in this lifetime, you saw, you know, especially if you're like in your 70s, you saw them win and then you saw them win again. That's rare. That doesn't happen, right? Yeah. LSU thought they were going to be winning titles forever with Nick Saban. They won one, then they won another one with Ed Orgeron. Georgia, y'all got two, but that's about, I don't know if you're going to win another one.
They went 40 years without one. Clemson went dang near 30 plus without one.
And then one, two. Yes. So for me, I just, this breaks my heart, but I've only seen two Florida State national championships in my lifetime because I wasn't really cognitive enough in 93 to know. So 99 and 2013, I'd like to see at least one more before I go see Jesus. So I'm going to have to pick a national championship.
I know it hurts to do it though, don't it? But I also think that's big because, you know, again, man, like for you and for me, and I'm sure anyone listening, that national championship trip, watching them win, there was no greater feeling in the world, you know, other than maybe like if you could beat Miami for a national championship or Florida for national, that'd be even sweeter. But no, I think you got to pick that. It's for the good of the program. It puts you one ahead of Florida. It puts you one closer to Miami. You know, it's just, man, I might be ready to fire the coach for losing to a rival 10 times.
For sure.
And in that 10 times, you better be beating the one that we ain't talking about. Like, if I'm talking about Miami right now, you better be beating Florida some too. But yeah, I think you got to go with your head and you got to go.
Here's what happens. You win the national championship and then you fire him the next day and then you go get a coach that can beat him 10 times.
Exactly. And again, I think it also comes back to not having them win one too.
Yeah.
I think that's big. Yeah. So you can at least, you know, Miami can say, we beat you last year. We did all that good. But like, man, hey, still. That's me blowing the dust off your trophy case because it ain't been opened in a while. So we'll end it there. I think we'll end it on that one. So, guys, we appreciate you watching. That's going to be it for us. Like we said, the next time you watch, we are going to be in Charlotte together on the same screen for ACC Media Days. We're going to be talking with Mike Norvell, all the players, everyone from the conference, all kinds of stuff, man. Got an exciting week ahead. Can't wait for it. Make sure you lock in with a like and subscribe. A rate and review on the podcast would help us reach other Noel fans as well. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor. You guys do a great job of it. We really appreciate it. It sounds like I'm joking when I say that, but y'all really do spread the word. Yes. And, you know, from the bottom of our heart, we really do say thank you for that. Thank you to everyone who watches and all the people who joined the PTS tribe. We love having you as part of the family, and we will catch you on the next one. As always, Michael, go Noles.
Go Noles, baby.